You're my fave.
Sorry.
Anyway, that's just kind of what the culture is like. So I think it gives, at least fills out a sense of what Paul is talking about. If you, and not having this firm code of Torah here, if you go along with the broader culture and what they're doing, you're basically going to become cannibals. You're just going to eat each other to death. So don't do that. Don't say, oh, hey, we don't have Torah, so we'll just go along with what everybody else is doing. That's not the intention either.
Structure.
Yeah. So now I say, however you want, by the Spirit walk, and the lusts of the flesh you most certainly will not fulfill. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. For these things are set against one another, in order that not that which you should desire, these things you do, or you should do. This is quite similar to what Paul is saying in Romans 7, which we talked about the other time as well. But if by the Spirit you are led, you are not under the Torah. Let's extend this. If you are led by Mufasa, you are not under Zazu.
Yeah.
I can't believe that totes worked. So manifest or visible or obvious, you can say, are the works of the flesh, which are, we'll see if I can get these. I might have to look at the definitions. Adultery, or I think this one's more literally fornication. So any kind of sexual, yeah, we could fill that out. We'll actually be filling this one out more in Can of Worms tonight as well. Yeah. So that'll be fun. Any kinds of sexual naughtiness, uncleanliness, licentiousness, idolatry. This says pharmakeia, which sounds a lot like pharmacy because it is a lot like pharmacy. So using basically magic, like kind of magic drugs. So using sorts of things like that for purpose of manipulation. So like think like witches' potions, sort of stuff like that with a cauldron and like woman with funny hair and black hat, and, you know, smoke coming out of the cauldron and greenness inside. That kind of pharmakeia. Ekthrai. I think that's enmity. Let me check. Yeah, enmity or hatred. Eris, which I think is jealousy? What is that? No, strife. So strife
or discord. Hey, see ya.
Strife or discord. Zelos, which is can literally be zeal, so can be a good thing. But I think clearly he means it in the negative way here, because he's listing like things of the flesh. So something like jealousy. You can have... It's possible to have this in a positive sense. You can think of the way that God is jealous for us, for instance. That's a positive sense. But this is just, hey, I would enjoy your items. Angers. I think this one's selfish ambition. Yeah, selfish ambition. I think this one's dissension. Yep, dissension. Heresies. It sounds a lot like heresies, because it is. The way that it translates here is dissensions, factions, or opinions, which is a good way of actually saying what heresy is. It's saying, I have my own private opinion on this matter, so I'm going to go and kind of go my way. And so I'll see you guys later, but this is what I think is the way to go. I think it's a good way of understanding what heresy is. So, hey man. It's okay. We'll see if we come around. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, hydrostase. Thonoi. Is thonoi murders? Which one is that? No, that one's envy. Methai, which is drunkenness. We had this... last week we had Methusocene. When the people should be drunk, then you put out the good wine. So this is that. I can't remember. So that drunkenness, komoi, this is like, what is this? It translates as excessive feasting, carousing, or revelry. Yeah.
Revelry.
And the things like these things. Which I said before to y'all, which I am telling you. So there's two ways of taking this. Just telling you beforehand, or I'm telling you, like, kind of before your face. Like, I'm telling you guys straightforwardly. I think the guy who taught this Galatians court took that straightforward. Like, I'm telling you guys, like, before you, sort of in your presence. He said that was the way he thought it should go. So that makes sense to me. So which I'm saying before you now, just as I said before, just as I said, it's literally said before you. Makes me wish we had another word before besides before. That the ones these things practicing the kingdom of God will not inherit. So again here, if you're thinking, okay, so Paul is just saying, hey, you guys just, man, law, whatevs, y'all just do your thing. Well, it's clear that there's some sort of law that Paul has in mind still, as far as there's some sort of, like, hey, this is kind of the foundation for justice. There's the foundation for what right and wrong is. It might not be codified exactly in what the Torah says, because that's meant for a specific time and place. But he goes and says, look, the thing that Jesus says, you know, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, fulfills the whole law. And then on the negative side, you've got all these things that he lists. So literally all kinds of stuff. And then he says, and the things like them. So not just this, and the things like them. And those who are doing this stuff have no inheritance in the kingdom of God. So clearly, there's not just a pure sort of law on one side and freedom on the other side, in the sense of freedom to kind of go whatever and do whatever. There's still things, I think, in Paul that you see that are clearly binding. It's just they are not, you could say, they're not exhaustively led, or they're not exhaustively meant for all people in Torah, which corresponds perfectly with what Jesus does in the Sermon on the Mount.
So is it kind of an idea of not, it's not freedom from the law, but freedom in the law?
I think one of the difficulties we have is when we're talking about, when we're saying law, what we mean by it. Because even, like, when Paul's saying law here, I think that he's, every time he's meaning Torah. And so, even saying that, not freedom from the Torah, freedom in the Torah. I don't know.
It's that the Torah has some type of authority still, which it should.
Well, there's, so what he's saying is that the things that are behind the Torah, the things that came before the Torah, the things that are underlying the Torah have value. And so that's kind of what he was doing in earlier chapters, is when he was talking about pistis and talking about the quality of Abraham, and said, this is the fundamental thing. It's not the observance of Torah that's fundamental. It's this trust to God, this trust in God that's fundamental. And the way that Abraham entrusted his life to God, that's the fundamental thing, and not keeping a food law, not keeping circumcision. So there's a sense in which he's seeking to get to the things that are underneath it, that are behind it, saying this is the fundamental stuff, and those things are eternal. Those things are lasting. But the you can say the Jewish specifics, the things like, you know, like he says when he's talking to Peter, the things that qualify as acting like a Jew. He says, you, Peter, you're not living like a Jew anymore. So why are you bothering? Why are you bothering all the Greeks and saying that the Greeks have to live like a Jew when you yourself have left behind these parts of the law? So those parts of the law which qualify as acting like a Jew, you know, that make you Jewish, that's the stuff that Paul's saying, nope. But the underlying things, you can say the underlying moral qualities that are there, he views as still binding.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Next one. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, pistis. It's kind of fun because this is one of those things where I remember when I first started learning Greek, I was like, you know, again, faithfulness is one thing in my mind, faith is another thing in my mind, and they're pretty far away from each other. So I remember seeing pistis translated one place because I was just looking online different like websites. I remember pistis being translated as faith or something like that in one spot. And then going, and I'm like, I wonder what it says in the fruit of the Spirit thing. Because I remember faithfulness there. And so I looked up there, and it was the same word. I'm like, dude, what the heck? Like, what's the deal, guys? What's going on here? Anyway, pistis. Prautes, which is like, you can say gentleness. Egkrate, like self-control. Against things such as these.
Can we go over one thing that I'm interested in? Because
yeah.
I remember one time a pastor trying to say self-control, meaning as control of your own body.
Okay.
And so if you have anything spiritually that happens to you where you have no control of your body, then it's automatically an evil spirit. I just remember someone telling me that at one point, and it was kind of made me go like, what? Like, so, because what I was thinking when it was saying self-control is I was thinking, like, being able to control your own, like, will and control your own, like, wants and desires.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's, like, what it was more accurate saying, and I want to hear it from someone who has, like, a better understanding of the language, whether that's the accuracy of what it's meaning.
You know? Yeah, yeah. I mean, part of it isn't just language either. Part of it is, you know, part of it is, you know, the language stuff is helpful, but part of it is also using theology from elsewhere, from the rest of the texts that are, you know, that we have. I think with self-control, so he was saying that if you are doing something where you're not in control of yourself, then you're under the influence of an evil spirit. Okay. I mean, I think
essentially, because what he was saying was that people who have, like, spiritual experiences where they might not, like, be fully in control of their bodies and stuff,
yeah.
Which he was arguing that pretty much anything that, like, the reason of staying away from people who are more charismatics, essentially, he's arguing against charismatics and using this verse to try to do that.
Yeah,
Because he was saying, look, it's a fruit of the Spirit to stay in control of your body. And as soon as people have no control of their body, they feel like they can't stand up or things like that, where people have mentioned in different, where they fall down and things like that, where people have those experiences and not trying to say whether they're legitimate or not, but he was specifically using this verse to argue against that.
Yeah.
Would you say that that's like an accurate thing to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think that he'd probably be in trouble with that, but I don't know if I would necessarily go straight to this one, because he's talking about sort of general things that the Spirit produces. And so, for instance, you might go and say, we're gonna get later to the spot where Jesus is cleansing the temple, and when he cleanses the temple, he makes a whip. And he starts going, you know, he starts going kind of crazy. And so at that point, do you say, well, the fruit of the Spirit is love. And, you know, he's not being loving. Or maybe you could say the fruit of the Spirit is joyful. And clearly he's not being joyful here. He's just not sufficiently happy. So clearly he's possessed by a demon in this instance. I just think the way that he is arguing that, I think you could find so many holes in it, such as that one, that I'm not even totally sure what to do with it. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the concern there.
Because when I hear, like, the self-control thing, I don't think of, like, oh, control of your own body, as in you are not, like, you're able to do the motor skills.
Of, like, substances.
I'm thinking what it's like self-control, as in like, oh, dude, you're able to, like, man, I really want this thing, but, like, even though I have this desire, I'm not going to choose that, and I'm going to choose to follow God and
smile. Right.
And that's
right.
What I think of when I think of self-control, as being able to control your own desires. And then when he said that, and he was trying to use that, like, super adamantly against that, and it just made me like, what? Like, am I misunderstanding the text?
Yeah. I mean, I think that at that point, I think that he is importing his own theological concerns into that text, is totally understandable. I mean, I don't want to be like, hey, throw a huge rock at this guy. I think that we all have tendencies to do. I think that we all have tendencies to do that, and so I don't want to be uncharitable to the guy. But at the same time, even if you just look at the original speaking in tongues, for instance, it doesn't seem as though when the tongues of fire fell down, it doesn't seem as though they were trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
It seems as though there's something that happens to them. And in my own experiences, my own experiences speaking in tongues, like, every time that, like, I've been in a situation where there's a speaking in tongues, I've felt like I was trying to make myself do it. And that's part of the reason that, for me, I don't necessarily feel like, hey, I have this huge gifting in the speaking in tongues. Like, I have this particular spiritual gift. Because in trying to exercise it, I feel like it is me trying to exercise it. I feel like it's me sort of just like, well, like, kind of everybody else is going, you know, doing this. So this is sort of what's going on. And it's not like, I look at the example in Acts, and I don't see sort of this, hey, everybody, like, let's get together and bibbidi bobbidi bibbidi bobbidi bibbidi bob. Like, you don't see that. It's something happens to them that they're not in control of, and that's exactly the point. It's, this comes from God and not from us.
Yeah.
So,
there's cautiousness involved in especially tongues or gifts like that.
Yeah. I just think if you were to use that criteria that he's giving as like a hard and fast criteria, then I think that you'd be in a position where you would say that when tongues originally falls, that these guys aren't in control of what they're doing. And so I think that you would end up, I think you'd end up forced to say some things about them and about that original kind of occurrence that I don't think, in the long run that he would agree with.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, to be honest, I just don't really think that this text has a whole lot of import to that in the first place.
Yeah.
So,
continue.
Anyway, so we usually translate this, against these things there is no law. That's how we usually translate it. If we're going namas as Torah forever, and say, against these things there is no Torah. Or you can say, against these things, the Torah is not against these things. Which, that to me actually makes the most sense. I think that he's bringing the against these things to the front. There's like the Torah is not against this stuff. So love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. He says, the Torah is never meant to be against these things. And these are the fruit of the Spirit. This is what the Spirit is producing. The Torah is never meant to be against this stuff. This is the stuff that's behind the Torah.
That makes way more sense.
Does that work?
Yeah.
So I think from a translation perspective, I think that's actually superior. I just think it holds up.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Now the ones of Jesus Christ, the flesh crucified with the desires, you can say the desires, and with the lusts. If we are living in the Spirit also let us walk, or let us establish, you could say. So here, the verse before that, he's going on again, like he was earlier, about the sort of the believer's identity. The believer's identity, it's not Jew, it's not Gentile, it's not slave, free, male, female. The believer's identity is this new creation, is this crucified with Christ. So that's what he's saying here. So those who are of Christ, you're crucified with him. So all those desires, all that whatever crappy stuff, that's done away with. And then if we're living in the Spirit, so if we're living in the Spirit of new creation, the thing that he's given, let's walk in the Spirit. Let us not become... it's literally vainglory. What's a better translation of vainglory? Conceited, boastful. This is literally calling one another out, and being jealous of one another. So provoking one another, being jealous of one another. So don't don't do that. That's end of 5. Any questions before we get to 6? Good, because 6 is awesome. 6 is kind of like... I love them all, but it's neat because it's kind of like a lot of these have been super deep as far as theology goes and trying to go and figure, hey, how does this all work in Paul's mind? How do you, like, following Paul's arguments? And it's hard for us to reconstruct sometimes because we don't see the people that Paul's arguing with, and so we have to reconstruct their arguments as well, and those aren't always explicit. And so there's often a lot of reconstruction. Here you have, in 6, you have kind of what flows from the argument, from what's just happened. And what's neat is that even for folks that don't necessarily have, even folks that get tied in knots when it comes to, you know, kind of 2 through 5, often when it comes to verse, you know, to chapter 6, it's kind of everyone can be agreed, like, hey, this is what we're supposed to do, so...